Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Now, if you're hearing today's show online or on your smartphone, you may not be aware that KNSJ's antenna was damaged by a recent storm and been knocked off the air. The repair will be costly, so we want to encourage our listeners to visit knsj.org and make a donation to help get East County's local radio station back on the airways soon. Today, we open our show with the latest news on local, state, and federal officials pausing the use of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine due to a rare blood clotting condition. Fortunately, the two other vaccines are available locally and safe, and they're helping drop COVID-19 cases sharply as the state gears up for a full reopening that's still scheduled for June 15th. Now, as of now, everybody in California age 16 and up is eligible to receive the vaccines. We hear a lot about deaths from COVID-19, but not as much about the long-term effects in survivors, including damage to lungs, hearts, and brains. And now, a new long-term effect is turning up, hearing loss, so stay tuned for details. Also today, we'll have some breaking national news on congressional actions targeting Asian hate crimes and President Joe Biden's historic announcement of plans to withdraw U.S. troops from Afghanistan by this fall, 20 years after the 9/11 terror attacks that sparked the long conflict. Dr. Akilah Weber, a La Mesa City Council member, has won her election to fill the seat vacated by her mother, Shirley Weber, California's new Secretary of State. And out in Pine Valley, a Border Patrol agent and an off-duty firefighter teamed up to save a life at the Pine Valley Bridge, and we'll have details on today's show. In Lemon Grove, the City Council will soon be considering a proposal on April 20th to limit council members' speaking time, a move targeting the council's newest member, Liana LeBaron. Colleagues say she's used more than her fair share of time asking questions, making meetings run long, but some constituents stand by her efforts. Joe Musgrove became the first Padre in the team's history to pitch a no-hitter earlier this month. Hear about his East County roots and how some are honoring his feat on today's show. As COVID cases fall, San Diego State University has announced plans to hold in-person graduation ceremonies for both the 2020 and 21 class and return to live instruction this fall. On Crime Beat, hear about a bizarre series of intentional vehicle rammings across East County before a suspect was finally apprehended. Then from Public News Service, we'll have details on President Joe Biden's actions and proposals to reduce gun violence after the latest mass shootings. San Diego County supervisors have rejected a staff proposal to raise fees on businesses, and we'll have details. Easter is over, but the Humane Society has some cute and cuddly bunny rabbits available for adoption. And the East County Leadership Council has announced an essay contest for young people to share how the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted their lives. Community colleges in California are seeing drops in enrollment, especially in communities of color. We'll have details from California News Service today. Drug Take-Back Day is coming up, and we'll tell you where you can drop off your unwanted or expired prescription drugs, as well as vaping devices. Now, if you're looking for an unusual adventure, Camel Camp is coming up in Ramona in early May. And if you look up during the last 2 weeks in April in the wee hours of the morning, you just may spot some fireballs in the sky, the Lyrids meteor shower. There are more astronomical events coming up, including another meteor display and three consecutive supermoons. Today, we'll also be airing one of our Best of East County episodes, an interview with Diana Lindsay from a couple of years ago, the author of The Coast to Cactus Guide to Local Trails. And finally, since we're off to a dry season, we'll have some water-saving tips for you to do your part in conserving our region's most precious resource. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is Alexa Oslowski with a health alert. San Diego County announced it has paused its use of the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine. The county's action comes after the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and the California Department of Public Health advised pausing the vaccine after six women between ages 16 and 48 developed a rare, severe type of blood clot called cerebral venous sinus thrombosis. The clots occurred 1 to 2 weeks after the women received the vaccine and can cause stroke-like illness. Over 6.8 million doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine have been administered in the U.S., so the serious clotting complication occurred in less than 1 in a million cases. No clots have been reported among the 58,000 people who received the Johnson & Johnson vaccine in San Diego County, according to County Health and Human Services. The other two vaccines authorized in the U.S., made by Pfizer and Moderna, have not been linked to any blood clotting cases after tens of millions of doses in the U.S. and over 180 million doses worldwide. Pfizer and Moderna vaccines rely on mRNA, unlike the Johnson & Johnson vaccines. If you have received the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and developed severe headache, abdominal pain, leg pain, or shortness of breath, you should contact your healthcare provider and seek immediate medical treatment, county health officials advise. Anyone who received the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and develops the clotting condition, along with low blood platelets, should not receive standard treatment with the blood thinner heparin, because this can cause, quote, tremendous harm, according to Dr. Peter Marks, Food and Drug Administration director. Area residents not yet vaccinated should get the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine instead, which accounts for over 95% of local vaccine supplies. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine, like the AstraZeneca vaccine used in Europe, is an adenoviral vaccine. AstraZeneca's vaccine has sparked concerns and has been discontinued in some areas after 222 suspected cases of dangerous blood clots and low platelet counts, including over 30 deaths, occurred after the first AstraZeneca vaccine. However, Governor Gavin Newsom said the disruption in Johnson & Johnson vaccines will not hamper the state's plan to reopen its economy on June 15th.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
On this vote, the yeas are 92, the nays are 6. The motion is agreed to.
The Senate opened debate on an anti-Asian American hate crimes bill with overwhelming bipartisan support Wednesday. The COVID-19 Hate Crimes Act would speed up the Justice Department's review of hate crimes, responding to an increase in incidents against the Asian American and Pacific Islander communities during the coronavirus pandemic. Congress recently held its first hearing on anti-Asian violence and discrimination in decades, after a gunman last month killed 8 people in Georgia, 6 of whom were Asian women. Also in the Senate, Democrats have proposed a large-scale overhaul of unemployment programs to increase benefits and extend them for a longer period of time. Democrats hope to make these changes permanent in the pandemic's aftermath. President Joe Biden announced Wednesday he will withdraw all U.S. troops from Afghanistan by September 11th, ending America's longest war.
I'm now the 4th United States president to preside over American troop presence in Afghanistan. 2 Republicans, 2 Democrats. I will not pass this responsibility on to a 5th.
Biden said the main purpose of the war was to ensure Afghanistan would not be used as a base to attack the U.S. Biden believes they accomplished that, especially after killing Osama bin Laden a decade ago.
We cannot continue the cycle of extending or expanding our military presence in Afghanistan, hoping to create ideal conditions for the withdrawal and expecting a different result.
Big questions loom about the impact of the withdrawal, including whether the Afghan president will be able to hold on to power against the Taliban, and what will happen to the rights of women and minorities in Afghanistan after the U.S. departure. At a White House press briefing, CBS senior White House correspondent Weijia Zhang asked Press Secretary Jen Psaki about the president's timing.
Republican senators have criticized attaching the withdrawal of troops in Afghanistan to September 11th. They say it's politically driven. Do you have a response to that?
The president wanted to send a clear message that this is not going to be an open-ended timeline to withdrawing troops.
Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina criticized Biden's decision at a news conference. Among other reasons, Graham said the Obama administration's Iraq troop withdrawal led to the formation of ISIS.
I'm heartbroken that President Biden, for political reasons, took the high-risk strategy. This is an unforced error.
Moving on to other foreign policy, Vice President Kamala Harris says she will visit Mexico and Guatemala, quote, as soon as possible. Harris emphasized she will focus on what motivates migrants to leave their homes in Central America, while Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas will be responsible for addressing the ongoing security and immigrant processing situation at the U.S.-Mexico border. Finally, the White House is expected to announce today Erica Mortsugu will be the administration's senior-level Asian American liaison. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Laura Rosbrow-Tellum. Thanks for listening.
Governor Gavin Newsom has announced that starting June 15th, he intends to lift all COVID-19 restrictions on businesses, gatherings, and recreational activities, though a statewide mask mandate will remain in place. At a press conference in San Francisco, the governor said, "We are seeing a bright light at the end of the tunnel." The state will eliminate its tiered system of COVID-19 restrictions on June 15th, provided hospitalizations from COVID-19 don't spike and vaccines remain available as expected. More than 20 million vaccinations have been administered statewide, including over 1 million in San Diego County. The June 15th date is 2 months after vaccines will become available to all Californians age 16 and up, which begins April 15th. In more good news, San Diego moved into the orange tier this week, Supervisor Nathan Fletcher announced. "The vaccine has given us a path to save lives, restore our economy, send our kids back to school, and get our way of life back," says Fletcher. The orange tier allows restaurants, movie theaters, gyms, and places of worship to increase capacity. In addition, breweries and wineries can reopen at limited capacity indoors, and bars that don't serve food can open outdoors. Fletcher said the county would also end the 10 p.m. curfew on restaurants, Times of San Diego reports. Infections are rising in other parts of the county, with some of the outbreaks linked to the new variants of the virus, but California has been able to keep its positivity rate under 2% for several weeks now. Newsom faces a likely recall election later this year, and the Republicans seeking to succeed him criticized the governor's reopening announcement, though they have long called for reopening businesses, schools, and churches. Former San Diego Mayor Kevin Faulkner faulted the restrictions over the past year for causing job losses, business closures, and loss of in-person education, though these steps were intended to save lives. Now Faulkner concludes Newsom has shown that he's only motivated by his own political survival, not doing what's best for Californians. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Mitchell Murphy.
If you've noticed some hearing loss after you've had COVID, you're not alone. Experts are starting to see cases pop up, and they advise people with symptoms to ask their doctor to arrange a hearing test right away because treatments are more effective early on. In addition, since ear follicles do not self-repair or grow back, most hearing loss is permanent. UC San Diego audiology professor Megan Spriggs says she has seen a few cases of COVID-related hearing loss.
Anecdotally, I have seen some of that in our clinic. I've seen people who have had hearing loss that recovers and people who have had hearing loss that has not.
A small study done in the UK found that 1 in 10 COVID patients reported a change in hearing. Common signs of hearing loss include a need to turn the TV up louder than normal or trouble hearing conversations over the phone or in a crowded room. If you want to help a loved one with hearing loss, Spriggs suggests wearing a mask that has a clear plastic section near the mouth to make it possible for them to read your lips. Because of the pandemic restrictions, many more people have started using earbuds all day long for Zoom calls. Diane Nenz with United Healthcare Hearing says it's best to use earbuds in an otherwise quiet environment and limit them to 60 minutes at a time at a maximum of 60% volume.
The prolonged use of earbuds, especially at high volume, may contribute to noise-induced hearing loss. And that's because earbuds may sit deeper in the ear canal, and many times people turn up the volume to overcome background noise.
Nance recommends that people should be screened at least every decade through age 50, and then at 3-year intervals thereafter. You can find a free hearing screening test on the United Healthcare Hearing website. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
La Mesa City Council member Dr. Akilah Weber has won the election to fill her mother's former seat in the 79th Assembly District. The seat is open because Assemblymember Shirley Weber was appointed to succeed Alex Padilla as Secretary of State in a series of changes prompted by Senator Kamala Harris's election as Vice President. Padilla was appointed to succeed Harris in the Senate. Dr. Akilah Weber, a Democrat, received 52% of the vote out of five candidates in the assembly race, according to the San Diego County Registrar of Voters. Dr. Weber called the election night results staggering, adding, "My campaign is focused on one mission, creating healthier communities for everyone who lives and works in the 79th district." Her priorities will include economic prosperity, expanding quality health care, investing in education, and protection of our environment, she says. Weber is a medical doctor who leads the Pediatric and Adolescent Gynecology Division at Rady's Children's Hospital, San Diego. Marco Contreras, the only Republican in the race and the owner of Rancho Customs Brokers, got 33% of the vote. The other three candidates, all Democrats, split the remaining 15% of the vote. Leticia Munguia, a union representative for the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, or AFSCME, was third with 8% of the vote, followed by Shane Parmalee, a teacher, with 5%. Aramik Glass-Blake, a restorative justice consultant, activist, and preacher, placed fifth with 1%. The 79th Assembly District stretches from Allied Gardens and Linda Vista South through La Mesa, Lemon Grove, National City, Southeast San Diego, Eastlake, and Otay Ranch. Dr. Weber's victory results in a vacancy to fill on the La Mesa City Council. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Mitchell Murphy with a People Power Report. A San Diego Border Patrol agent and an off-duty firefighter saved a life early Tuesday morning when they prevented a woman from jumping off the Pine Valley Bridge. Around 7 a.m., the Border Patrol agent was driving east on Interstate 8 when he saw the woman standing on the rails of the Pine Valley Bridge. The agent quickly turned around and was joined by an off-duty firefighter. The agent and firefighter physically removed the woman from the edge of the bridge and secured her for her safety, according to a press release issued by the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol. The woman was later transferred to the California Highway Patrol for care and assistance. Chief Border Patrol Agent Aaron says a tragedy was avoided thanks to the effort of the men he hailed as heroes. The Pine Valley Bridge is 440 feet high with a 450-foot span, one of the highest bridges in the United States, but tragically, it has been the scene of many suicides through the years. If you are suffering from depression, there is help available. For immediate help during a crisis, you can call 911 or call the San Diego Access and Crisis Hotline at 888-724-7240. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ 89.1 FM, this is Mitchell Murphy.
On April 20th, the Lemon Grove City Council will hear a proposal that would limit council members' speaking time to 5 minutes per agenda item, plus 3 additional minutes later on. The proposed action targets Councilmember Leanna LeBaron, who has been criticized by colleagues for lengthy comments up to 45 minutes and questions to staff that some say reflect a lack of preparation. The council will also consider moving some agenda items to a later date if a meeting runs past 9 p.m., 3 hours after the 6 p.m. starting time. Councilmembers Jennifer Mendoza, a Democrat, and Jerry Jones, a Republican, introduced the measure. Mendoza says meetings have run over 5 hours regularly since LeBaron's election, and council has had to schedule several makeup sessions. Mendoza offered to brief LeBaron on items of interest and encouraged her to reach out to city manager Lydia Romero, the Union Tribune reports. Mendoza says if a council member is not sufficiently prepared to discuss an agenda item, quote, "it is a disservice and disrespectful to other council members, the staff, and our constituents," end quote. Jones faulted LeBaron for grilling staff members and for taking sides with the cannabis dispensary advocate in a recent hearing based on what he called hearsay, not evidence. LeBaron contends that such a rule would amount to censorship. She states, "I think the public is going to be able to capture the essence of a council member attempting to be silenced." LeBaron also says that City Manager Romero and other staffers have not responded to her inquiries. On social media, members of the public voiced mixed opinions, with some supporting LeBaron for standing up for constituents, while others back limiting speaking times. Imposing time limits on elected officials' speech is relatively rare, but has occurred. The city of San Jose recently adopted a plan limiting council members to 10 minutes to speak on an item initially, followed by 5 more minutes to discuss or ask questions. In East County, this is not the first time that a local board has considered whether to place limits on the actions of an outspoken council member or muzzle their speech. The Grossmont High School District imposed time limits for trustees to speak and infamously turned off the microphone of former dissident member Priscilla Schreiber. La Mesa City Council once considered requiring 2 council members to place an item on the agenda, but ultimately rejected the idea. El Cajon City Council opted against a similar proposal targeting Councilman Ben Colasso, who had sought to put many dozens of items on the agenda, but instead adopted a rule requiring 2 members' approval to request that staff create a report. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is Mitchell Murphy with the Sports Report. East County sports fans have been celebrating the first no-hitter hurled by San Diego Padres pitcher in the team's history. The feat was accomplished on April 9th against Texas Rangers by Padres pitcher Joe Musgrove, who grew up in El Cajon and graduated from Grossmont High School. His mother, Diane Musgrove, pitches coffee and other goods out of the family business Cafe Adesso Gourmet Cafe Drive-Thru in Alpine. There, fans came to celebrate, as YouTube video shows. Diane Musgrove has run the coffee shop since her husband fell ill, all while raising the couple's 3 children. Cafe Adesso was established in 1998 and still is going strong. The morning after Joe Musgrove's no-hitter game, Cafe Adesso tweeted out, "The number #44 is a popular drink this morning. Joe Musgrove wears the number 44 on his jersey in honor of his favorite childhood baseball star, Jake Peavy." The coffee shop reported selling over 50 gallons of the cold brew in 2 days after the big win. He will soon have more than a coffee named after him. The Padres have commissioned a mural of Musgrove, which is now being painted on the building of Grossmont High School.
Things are looking brighter for the San Diego State community now that the county has shifted to the orange tier. The SDSU Commencement Committee confirmed via email that spring commencement ceremonies will be conducted in person for those who choose to register. Graduation ceremonies will be held May 25th through 27th at Petco Park Stadium downtown. For those who choose not to attend, SDSU will also provide a virtual ceremony, and these options will be available to both the graduating classes of 2020 and 2021. There's more good news for students on the horizon. University leaders announced that SDSU is planning to offer primarily in-person instruction for the fall semester, instead of the previously planned hybrid model. On-campus housing will also be reopened to thousands of students now that California's Governor Gavin Newsom has announced plans to fully reopen the state's economy on June 15th. Newsom stated, "I want kids back in school safely for in-person instruction. On June 15th, we anticipate there will be no barrier to getting all of our kids safely back. That includes K-12 as well as community colleges and universities," the governor added. For students who plan on returning to San Diego State's campus for classes, no specific requirements and guidelines have yet been announced, besides a mask mandate, though the university is monitoring county guidelines closely to establish safe and effective policies. According to a campus-wide email, some of those policies may include proof of vaccination, continued COVID-19 testing and contact tracing, wastewater testing, enhanced cleaning protocols, and quarantine housing. SDSU's Love Library will be partly reopened starting May 24th, and registration for the fall semester will begin May 25th. While the community has mixed feelings about the safety of reopening and going back to in-person instruction, University President Adela De La Torre, Associated Students President Christian Holt, and other campus leaders have all voiced confidence in the transition and remain optimistic about students returning to campus in the fall. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Jonathan Getz with Crime Beat Report. A suspect has been arrested for deliberately ramming multiple vehicles at locations across East County. The bizarre incident began shortly before 10 p.m. on April 1st when deputies from the Rancho San Diego substation responded to a call reporting that a man intentionally drove his truck into a Prius parked at Calle Verde and Fury Lane 3 times. The witness said she tried to flee from the suspect's erratic behavior, but he followed her and then intentionally hit the back of her vehicle, too. He then drove to a nearby Starbucks on Hamishaw Road, where he reportedly rammed his vehicle into a silver sedan several times. The suspect fled that scene and collided with 2 additional vehicles, says Sergeant James McCurdy. Deputies saw the suspect run a red light at Hamishaw Road and Campo Road, but when they tried to stop his vehicle, he took off on a pursuit that lasted for 20 minutes. The suspect, later identified as David Archer, led sheriff's deputies on a pursuit from unincorporated La Mesa through Lemon Grove, San Diego, and Spring Valley. He then deliberately rammed the back of a vehicle traveling east on Hamishaw Road. The collision caused the suspect to lose control of his truck and sideswipe 2 parked vehicles. According to Sergeant McCurdy, the suspect's vehicle became disabled and stopped. Archer initially refused to obey deputies' orders, but ultimately surrendered. The 56-year-old suspect was taken into custody. The assaults and traffic collisions are under investigation by the San Diego Sheriff's Department and the San Diego Police Department. Some victims of the assaults suffered minor injuries and were treated at the scene or local hospitals.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
They've offered plenty of thoughts and prayers, members of Congress, but they passed not a single new federal law to reduce gun violence. Enough prayers. Time for some action.
President Joe Biden announced executive actions in response to gun violence, but he said Congress can and should do more than the president alone can. The House has passed 2 bills to expand background checks on firearm sales. However, Second Amendment arguments in the U.S. Senate have long stalled legislation there. A newly filed House bill, the Handgun Purchaser Licensing Act, would push state and local governments to create permit-to-purchase handgun laws. States like Connecticut now require potential gun buyers to apply for a permit directly from local law enforcement. Jeremy Stein, with a group Connecticut Against Gun Violence, says the 10-year-old state law has curbed gun homicides by 40%, in spite of laxer rules in other states.
About 50% of the guns used in crimes, they're coming from states with weak gun laws, states with no universal background checks, that don't have permit to purchase laws, that allow homemade ghost guns, unregistered, unlicensed, untraceable guns to be sold.
Housing Secretary Marsha L. Fudge announced nearly $5 billion in new rental assistance grants to states and local governments yesterday. The money, part of Biden's COVID relief package, is geared toward affordable housing and other services for people experiencing homelessness. The effort to unionize workers at an Amazon warehouse in Alabama was behind by 2-1 as of yesterday evening. According to the New York Times, almost half the votes had been tallied before counting paused for the night. Meanwhile, a bill to make voting less accessible passed a Texas House committee yesterday. It could jail election administrators who send out absentee ballot applications without a voter request. House Bill 6 is one of dozens Texas lawmakers are considering. The trial of Derek Chauvin, the former Minneapolis police officer charged with killing George Floyd, is finishing its 2nd week. In December, after Floyd's killing sparked massive protests, the Minneapolis City Council unanimously voted to divert $8 million from the police to fund violence prevention and other services. That's about 4% of the department's budget. But local accountability groups are pressing for other structural changes.
There's not going to be any placating us with half measures or with meaningless promises of name changes and other useless reforms.
Jay Yates is an organizer with the Twin Cities Coalition for Justice for Jamar, founded after 2 Minneapolis police officers killed Jamar Clark in 2015. Yates says they'll keep demonstrating until a citizen council is in place to oversee the department. Finally, record numbers of asylum seekers turned away from the U.S. are seeking sanctuary in Mexico. More than 9,000 people applied for asylum in Mexico last month. Officials there say that's the highest ever monthly tally. Michaela Savitt, Mike Moan, and Cole Hemstreet contributed reporting. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Laura Ross-Bartellum. Thanks for listening.
San Diego County's Board of Supervisors has unanimously rejected over $600,000 in fee increases and new fees that were proposed for fiscal year 2021-22. Instead, the county will explore the use of federal American Rescue Plan Act funds to cover anticipated budget shortfalls. The county's Department of Environmental Health and Quality had proposed increasing or enacting 139 fees that would have impacted restaurants, retail markets, school food facilities, farmers markets, mobile food facilities, and other businesses. East County Supervisor Joel Anderson says increasing fees on businesses that are barely surviving during the pandemic is the wrong idea at the wrong time. He adds, "We have businesses trying to reopen and families trying to survive. The county is providing a number of resources to our residents and businesses to meet the challenges of COVID-19. Deferring scheduled fee increases is yet another way we can help our community recover," he adds. Among those opposed to the fee hikes and new fees was the San Diego chapter of the California Restaurant Association, noting that the industry has been significantly impacted by continuing COVID-19 closures and enforcement regulations. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Easter is over, but it's not too late to adopt a bunny rabbit. San Diego Humane Society recently rescued 23 rabbits, and 17 of them are now ready to find new homes. They were rescued after neighbors reported rabbits running loose near a home in the Fairmont Park area. Officers found over 20 rabbits kept in a backyard enclosure without enough food, water, or clean living spaces, and some showed signs of illness or injuries. The owners agreed to give up the rabbits to the Humane Society, where veterinarians treated them for minor wounds. The rabbits have been rehabilitated and medically cleared by San Diego Humane Society's veterinary team. But there are now even more rabbits, since one female was pregnant and gave birth to 3 kids. Rabbits are prolific breeders and can have up to 10 babies per pregnancy. With a gestation period of less than 4 weeks, they can have multiple large litters per year. To prevent unwanted breeding, San Diego Humane Society spays and neuters all rabbits before they're made available for adoption. All of the rabbits available for adoption have also been vaccinated against rabbit hemorrhage disease virus type 2. If you are interested in adopting a rabbit, visit sdhumane.org/adopt. Pet owners in need of help are also urged to contact the Humane Society. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
The East County Leadership Council is sponsoring an essay contest to better understand how COVID-19 has affected young people, including academically, college plans, and career choices. This contest is open to high school juniors and seniors, as well as college freshmen. Cash awards include a $250 first place prize, $100 for second place, and 3 third place awards of $50 each. Essays will be judged based on these 4 criteria. First, identify and discuss key challenges you face because of COVID-19, such as how the pandemic affected your academic performance, participation in sports, health, or your ability to achieve your goals. Second, discuss productive solutions for individuals and groups affected. Third, describe any positive effect that COVID-19 may have had on your life. And finally, judges will consider spelling and grammar. To enter, send your essay of up to 2,000 words to essay@ecleadership.org. Be sure to paste the entry into the body of the email, since attachments will not be opened. The entry deadline is May 8th. Include your name, your school, grade level, and, if you wish, social media handles. Finalists will be required to submit a picture within 48 hours of being notified, and winners must grant East County Leadership Council the first right of publication. Once again, entries should be emailed to essay@ecleadership.org. For questions or to get a mailing address, you can call Jonathan at 619-530-3041. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Community colleges nationwide are bracing for another drop in enrollment this year, especially among students of color. Data from the National College Attainment Network shows only about 55% of high school seniors have applied for federal financial aid. And the National Student Clearinghouse Research Center reports that in 2020, first-time enrollment was down 13% overall and almost 20% among Latino students. Paul Feast with the California Community College's Chancellor's Office says the pandemic has severely disrupted potential students' lives.
Many of our students are facing challenges with losing their jobs, having lower wages, having to care for their children, you know, as they're being homeschooled.
Feast says in California, fall community college enrollment dropped by 11% overall from 2019 to 2020, but 12% for Latino students, 16% for African Americans, and a whopping 22% for Native American students. And he says schools lost twice as many men compared with women. The most recent stimulus package includes millions for colleges to re-engage the student population. Feast adds that a chunk of money is targeted for direct aid to students.
And there's also some funding available for emergency grants for students that can help pay for things like childcare, transportation, technology assistance.
Colleges are hoping that the dip in enrollment is temporary and will rebound as the economy recovers from COVID. Students can find a wealth of information on financial aid and other programs at stayenrolled.com and icanaffordcollege.com. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
With opioid overdose deaths increasing during the pandemic, the Drug Enforcement Administration will hold its 20th annual Take Back Day on April 24th. At the last Take Back Day in October, DEA collected a record high amount of expired, unused prescription medications. The public turned in close to 500 tons of unwanted drugs. Over the 10-year span of Take Back Day, DEA has brought in over 6,800 tons of prescription drugs. With studies indicating a majority of abused prescription drugs come from family and friends, including home medicine cabinets, cleaning out unused medications is essential. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the U.S. has seen an increase in overdose deaths during the pandemic, with over 83,000 Americans overdosing during the 12 months ending July 1, 2020, the most ever recorded in a single year. Now, the increase in drug overdose deaths did appear to begin before the pandemic, but accelerated significantly during the first months of the shutdown. John Callery, special agent in charge of the DEA San Diego Field Division, says these medications can become deadly poisons in the wrong hands. The public is encouraged to return your unused, unwanted, and expired medications on April 24th between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. at drop-off sites across the county. These sites will follow COVID-19 guidelines to protect participants as well as law enforcement. DEA and its partners will collect tablets, capsules, patches, and other solid forms of prescription drugs, but they will not accept liquids, including IV solutions, syringes, or any illegal drugs. DEA will also accept vaping devices and cartridges at its drop-off locations if lithium batteries are removed. Participating locations in East County include the parking lots at the El Cajon and La Mesa Police Departments, as well as the San Diego Police Department's Eastern Division and the Sheriff's Poway Patrol Station. Learn more about the event and find more participating locations at deatakeback.com or call 800-882-9539. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Look up during the early morning hours, April 16th through 30th, and you just may be treated to a view of the Lyrids meteor shower. Called the Old Faithful of meteor showers by space.com, because the peak usually lasts for several hours, the Lyrids are known for producing dramatic fireballs in the sky, or meteors with trails of glowing ionized gas in their wake. Peak viewing locally is expected to occur, ironically, on Earth Day, Thursday, April 22nd, around 3:40 a.m. But that's not all. The Lyrids overlap with another meteor shower, the Eta Aquarius, which runs April 27th to May 28th, peaking May 4th through 6th. The Aquarius will feature fast-moving meteors in the morning sky, although they're not known for producing fireballs. Also coming up are three consecutive supermoons, with the next one rising on April 27th. According to NASA, a supermoon happens when a full moon occurs while the moon's orbit is at its closest point to Earth, making the moon appear brighter and larger than usual. For the best viewing conditions, head out to a dark area away from city lights, such as East County's desert and mountain areas, to enjoy the shooting stars and the rising supermoons. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. Look up during the early morning hours, April 16th through 30th, and you just may be treated to a view of the Lyrids meteor shower. Called the Old Faithful of meteor showers by space.com, because the peak usually lasts for several hours, the Lyrids are known for producing dramatic fireballs in the sky, or meteors with trails of glowing ionized gas in their wake. Peak viewing locally is expected to occur, ironically, on Earth Day, Thursday, April 22nd, around 3:40 a.m. But that's not all. The Lyrids overlap with another meteor shower, the Eta Aquarius, which runs April 27th to May 28th, peaking May 4th through 6th. The Aquarius will feature fast-moving meteors in the morning sky, although they're not known for producing fireballs. Also coming up are three consecutive supermoons, with the next one rising on April 27th. According to NASA, a supermoon happens when a full moon occurs while the moon's orbit is at its closest point to Earth, making the moon appear brighter and larger than usual. For the best viewing conditions, head out to a dark area away from city lights, such as East County's desert and mountain areas, to enjoy the shooting stars and the rising supermoons. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. Next up, we'll be re-airing one of our Best of East County bookshelf interviews from a couple of years ago with Diana Lindsay, the author of Coast to Cactus, A Guide to the Trails in Our Region.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Diana Lindsay. My guest is president of Sunbelt Publications and leading editor of the book Coast to Cactus, The Canyoneer Trail Guide to San Diego Outdoors. Coast to Cactus, which was published by Sunbelt in partnership with the San Diego Natural History Museum, contains 245 outings and 73 extension hikes. Welcome, Diana. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Let's start with the book. I know that it's based on the weekly Romo-Rama column for the San Diego Reader, and it's the field guide to the Natural History Museum's exhibition, Coast to Cactus, Southern California. But summarize, if you will, what readers will find in Coast to Cactus that they may not find elsewhere. How is it unique?
Well, first of all, it's more than a hiking guide. It is also a field guide. So unlike having to take your hiking guide out into an area that you want to explore along with many trail guides for flowers, for birds, for amphibians or reptiles, you can just take this one book, because what it does do is function as a field guide. There's 525 different species that are found in San Diego County that are featured, that have photos in them, that have full descriptions. So this is just the one book that you need to be able to study and learn about the county as you're hiking on a trail.
So that makes it much more practical.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's such a wonderfully colorful book.
Yeah, it has 665 color photos in it. It has 258 maps. It also features the habitats that you will find within the county. We're using the system that San Diego State University has on 9 different habitats that are found in San Diego County. And each of the maps has a symbol by it telling you what habitat you will encounter on that hike. So in some hikes, for instance, you may just have a chaparral or a riparian area. So there'll be the symbols for those two habitats next to the map, and you'll know you will encounter that on the hike. But another hike may have 5 or 6 different types of habitats that you will encounter as you are on the trail. So we're trying to teach people to become aware of when they hike, you know, what types of habitats they actually will encounter on those hikes.
That's wonderful. And can you also explain the map in the beginning of the book with the chapters for depending on which region?
We have a map in the front of the book, and we decided not to use a grid system that many hiking books do use. We wanted to make it easier for the reader so we have broken up the chapters according to logical areas that are geographical boundaries by freeways. So you can look at an area that's encompassed by, let's say, Interstate 15 or 5 and cross freeways that go, and you can go into that chapter and you will find all the hikes that are within that area. We have the overall breakdown of the book broken into the coastal hikes, the inland hikes, which are the foothills. We have the mountain hikes and the desert hikes. So those are the four regions that we cover within the book. And then within each of those regions, we break it down into geographical areas to make it easier for people to find those particular places that they want to explore.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So much to discover.
Yes.
Now, I understand that your company envisioned a hiking guide to the county, but then Jerry Schad's A Foot in a Field was published by Wilderness Press in 1986. How did that desire lead you to the production of Costa Cactus?
Well, my husband and I wrote the guidebook for the Anza-Borrego Desert region in 1978, and then we had thought beyond that, thinking that what was really needed was a guide to the entire county. Meanwhile, Jerry had been working on the county guide, and he came out with his book. It's a very excellent book. And so that kind of put our desires to do a county book on a shelf, but always we had that in the back of our minds. You know, if we were going to do a book, how could we do it that would be different than what Jerry did that the people would be interested in? And at the time, you know, we wanted to learn more about the county and the things that we could see on the trail. And that's when we joined the San Diego Natural History Museum and became canyoneers almost 30 years ago. And to learn about the species and the plants and the habitats that are found on trails. And from that experience, the idea evolved that, well, what if we took this experiences of knowing the species and the habitats and actually integrated it within a guidebook, would that be something that people would be interested in? And would it actually lead to really learning about the county and helping to understand what is actually found in our county?
How long did it take to put this together? It sounds like an enormous project.
Well, we introduced as a canyoneer, I introduced the idea of working on a book such as this about a decade ago, and it seemed like an overwhelming project. So it kind of sat on a back shelf for many, many years, and actually what happened, Jerry unfortunately had passed away, and I was at his memorial service, and the publisher of the San Diego Reader, Jim Holman, had said that they were looking for somebody to take over the Roma Rama column, which Jerry had written very wonderful columns throughout the years.
Right.
So I went back to the canyoneers and I said, you know, we have an opportunity here to actually do this book, and it would be more manageable because all we would have to do is do one article a week until we had enough articles to put it together in a book. And so that's when we made an agreement with my publishing house, the San Diego Natural History Museum, and the Canyoneers to work on this, and then we began the columns, a weekly column for the San Diego Reader. After several years, we had enough to do a book, and then the real work began. So then it was about 18 months, 2 years, to then basically strip all of the descriptions, pull it back, check all the descriptions for the trails to make sure they're accurate, and then to reinsert the descriptions, but not repeating them, only doing one particular detailed description in the book for every species that we wanted to cover. The difficulty here was to make sure that when we did put a species description in, that it was actually found on that trail and that the description was accurate. So we had to have all the curators with their specialties check everything we wrote. We had to work with all of the agencies where the trails were found and then run the trail descriptions by them to make sure they were accurate. They checked our trails. And so we made sure that not only were the species descriptions correct, that the habitats that we said were there were correct, but that all of the information regarding those species were correct. So that was a long project. Yeah, we had two other editors besides myself that worked very closely together. So we made sure that all the descriptions were accurate, and then we went back and forth and double checked everything.
It really sounds like a labor of love.
Well, actually, it was a labor of love because unlike most books where an author has the royalty and they make money from this book, everybody that worked on this book, all the canoneers, and there's over 50 people who made contributions to the Roma-Rama articles that we used, and the editors, myself and Paula Noel and Terry Varnell, all of us are volunteers at the San Diego Natural History Museum. So all our work was as a volunteer for the museum, and all the proceeds from the book that a normal author would receive are going to the museum. So when anybody buys Wonderful. This book, they're actually supporting the San Diego Natural History Museum.
That's nice to know. Talk a little bit more about the Canyoneers and this exhibit at the museum.
Yes, the Canyoneers are it's a program at the museum that's over 40 years old, and it was started by a botanist, Helen Shamley, at the museum. There was a canyon next to the museum, still there, mm-hmm. a Florida canyon, which was very lovely canyon. In several years later, after the Canyoneers began, there was a fire there, and that's what resulted in the Canyoneers actually moving out into the county. But the original idea was to have docents that were trained by the museum curators to take the public into the Florida Canyon. They were called the Florida Canyoneers, and to teach people what was in there and the value of that particular habitat. After the fire occurred, the habitat was not as pristine as it once was, so that's when the Canyoneers began to expand to do walks throughout the whole county, which we do now. We do offer free public walks every single weekend, and that is between September and June. You can find the free public walks by going onto the website for the San Diego Natural History Museum or picking up a brochure. No reservations required. Just show up. We break up into small groups, and the whole idea of a canyoneer walk is not to hurry up to get there and hurry up to get back. It's to walk slowly, to look around, to investigate, to smell, to see right. what the interaction is in the habitat with the surrounding plants and species.
So to engage all your senses.
Absolutely. And you asked about the connection to the exhibition, the Costa Cactus Southern California. That exhibition was created to basically get the county and the folks in the county to be aware of the habitats that are found here in the county. But more important than that, to understand that San Diego is a biological hot zone. It's a biodiversity hot zone. There are 32 places in the world that are hotspots, and to be a hotspot means that you have incredible diversity in an area, but you have threatened species or species that have disappeared. And because of that, you want to keep an eye and watch these areas very carefully. And because San Diego is a hotspot, we want people to be aware of what is out here. We want them to become more conscious of conservation for this area. And so that was part of what the exhibit is all about. So you can go to the exhibit, you can learn about the habitats, learn why San Diego is a hotspot, and then you can take the field guide, which is actually a complement to this exhibition, and this is your field guide to get into the field to actually see what's out there. So it complements the exhibition. One mm-hmm. is an actual museum experience, the other one is a field experience.
And do you think this will help conservation efforts?
We certainly hope so. It's, you know, the museum and also my publication house believe very strongly in what a Senegalese conservationist, Baba Douim, has said. And what he has said is, in the end, we will conserve only what we love. We will love only what we understand. And we will understand only what we are taught. And so that's what the exhibition is about. That's what this book is about. It's about teaching folks in San Diego County what is special about this county. And once you learn and get excited about it, you're going to have a personal feeling for it, and you're going mm-hmm. to want to protect it and lead to taking care of these special areas, which as our county grows and more people move into it, we want to make sure these particular areas are protected.
Wonderful. I can't wait to dig into this book. One last question. What is your favorite trail?
Well, I'm known as a desert person, so obviously my favorite trails are all in the Anza-Brego Desert State Park area. And those trails kind of vary for me depending on my moods. If I want a kind of a closed-in experience, I like to go into the slot canyons. Those are kind of fun because they're magical, especially with the light changes. If I want to have spectacular views, I might want to go up on Whale Peak and kind of take a look at the views around there. Split Mountain is always great for geology. Coyote Canyon is wonderful because it has the longest running stream in San Diego County. It always has water. Mountain Palm Canyon is wonderful. Mountain Palm Springs, rather. It has just wonderful palm trees that are in there. And then plus if you go up to Torote Bowl, there's the very rare elephant tree and a spectacular view of the Vallecito Badlands. So there's many special places in the Anza-Brego Desert. Fonts Point, a lot of people like to go out there and take a look at that spectacular view, especially at sunset, as you look out over the Borrego Badlands. But it's a very special place. So for me, I'm happy almost anywhere in the desert.
And have you always been a desert person?
Well, not really. It's interesting that you should ask that because this happens to be my 50th anniversary of my introduction to Anza-Brego State Park. I'd actually met my husband at a mountaineering club at UCLA when we always went backpacking the Sierras. And when he became a helicopter pilot with the Navy, we were stationed in San Diego. And he would fly over the desert on training missions and said, "Hey, we need to go out and check out that place." And I said, "Come on, get real. This is a desert. There's nothing there. That's right. Why it's a desert." And so we had a few arguments back and forth because he would say, "Come on, we really need to check it out." And I finally said, "Look, if I go one time out there, would you just quit bugging me?" So we went. I had a fantastic experience. It was spring. It was Painted Gorge out on Coyote Mountains. The following week, he said, "Okay, let's go to the Sierras." And I said, "Can we go back to the desert?"
No,
and I've been going ever since. My master's thesis was done on it, and several books have been done on the desert. And I always am anxious to get back to the desert.
Well, thank you for sharing your story.
You're welcome.
Our time is up, but it's been wonderful talking to you, Diana.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me.
For more information on Coast to Cactus, please visit sunbeltpublications.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
April showers bring May flowers, as the saying goes, but so far, this April has brought very little rainfall. So even though San Diego has diversified its water sources, we can't afford to be complacent. It's important to take action now to conserve water. Each of us can make a difference. Residents are being encouraged to voluntarily decrease our water usage to maintain our water storage levels for the future. Now here are some simple tips to conserve water at home or at your business, and also save money on your water bill. Fix leaky faucets and toilets. Install aerators with flow restrictors on kitchen and bathroom faucets. Take shorter showers. Don't leave the water running when you're rinsing dishes. Run the dishwasher and the clothes washer only when they have full loads. Turn off the water when brushing your teeth. Consider replacing older, high water volume toilets and washing machines with more efficient models. Water your landscaping before 10 o'clock in the morning and after 6 p.m. in the evening to reduce evaporation. Don't overwater landscaping. Avoid using a hose to wash off pavement when a broom can be used instead. Adjust automatic sprinklers to avoid overspraying. Fix broken and leaky sprinkler nozzles. Consider a water-smart landscaping, or better yet, landscape that's fire-resistant too. Add mulch around trees and plants to reduce evaporation. You can find more water conservation tips, tools, and resources at watersmartsd.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. Wooden Ambulance,
Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin MacLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.